Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. Hello and welcome back to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. Hope you guys are all having a great day today. Before we get to talking with my good buddy, Sam Kaiser, I want to remind you of a few things we have going on around the Shepherd's Crook and all things ministry really coming from our household. I want to remind you of the Sons and Slaves podcast. Something that we're going to be talking about today, Sam and I anyways, is about fatherhood and raising sons as sons and then raising daughters as daughters, which is clearly very important. On the Sons and Slaves podcast, I am hosting this show with my sons, and we're talking about boyhood and the process of becoming a man. Also, along the way, we're interviewing dads about fatherhood, and in fact, we may pull some of this episode and put over on the Sons and Slaves podcast. So if you haven't yet found that show, please go check that out and find that. Obviously, we have the Fruitful and Fearless podcast as well with Jordan and her friends that I'm occasionally on. You want to check that out for the ladies out there. And then just as a reminder, we have the Shepherd's Crook membership that we have for $5 a month that gets you a newsletter that comes to your inbox, your not email inbox, your actual inbox into your mailbox with a wax seal, some antique looking paper, and an article once a month. And then at the end of the year, the fiscal year, every year, what ends up happening is you get a year's worth of content via a thumb drive that comes right to your mailbox. So you can actually have the content, trying to give you ownership over access. And if you want to be a part of that, please just reach out. That also gets you access to all the previous cohorts that we've done with Michael Foster, Eric Kahn, Brian Sauvay, and others. And so if you want some of that content, then just reach out to me and I can get that to you. All right. I've had Sam on before. He is an old friend. We went to Pentecostal College together, and he's a good old charismatic that loves Doug Wilson. So he's my kind of guy, good buddy, and want to see how things are going with you, man. How's things going out there in the nation of California?
Yeah, man, it's good to chat with you. It's always fun reconnecting with friends, which we've stayed loosely connected over the years, kind of cheering each other on. But yeah, California is California. It's just interesting, like where I live, my buddy, I was telling you before we start here recording, owns a surf brand, and this surf brand's through his surf shop Esteem he's had for 20 years, but he always had this saying called "Not LA, not the Bay." Mm-hmm. And so that was like an old surf term. Like if you showed up to Pismo Beach and somebody would be like, "Hey, go back to LA, you know, get out of here," and or "go back to the Bay." And so he's branded that. And it's like, I have it on my vehicles and all this stuff, but it's like not. And now everyone that's not in those two cities, which everyone back east thinks everything about California is LA or the Bay.
That, yeah.
You know, and yet it would take you 16 hours to drive from the bottom of California to the top.
Man, that's
and there's
wild.
So much that's just not LA, not the Bay. And so I live in like this kind of unique bubble on the Central Coast called the San Ynez Valley. And it's a unique place. And it's God's doing some cool stuff here. And it's awesome. Definitely not LA. It's not the Bay, but still it's not Kentucky either, which is where I'm from. So
yeah, well, man, that's the same with Illinois, brother. I mean, it's the same thing where we, you know, immediately start talking with somebody and they're like, "Oh, Chicago." Actually 5 hours south. And it's frustrating. Yeah. You know, in some ways, we're the California of the Midwest or the New York of the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is where we're at, and we're having to deal with upstate politics. And it really is quite frustrating, to be honest. And we've had to convince people, because there's so many people within our church that have really been tempted and actually even desired and bought property and want to get out of the state as quick as possible. So it's basically people are staying because of their work, their family, and their church family. That's why they're here. Other than that, they'd be out.
Yeah. I definitely feel like a missionary. I didn't choose to come here. I feel like God called me here, and by coincidence, I ended up out here from doing ministry in Cleveland, Tennessee. Got connected with a guy when I was in college there, and then reconnected later, and he moved me out. Had no idea what we were coming to. And so I always say I didn't come for money or politics, and so I can't leave for it. You know, like I'm here as you know, and God's uniquely, you know, I'm the son of a coal miner's daughter from Eastern Kentucky. I'm one of the most impoverished places in the country. That's where I'm from. The floods happened last year. People were swimming to the embankment of my mom's property.
Wow.
And like that's where I'm from. And by the grace of God, I'm a coal miner's kid in Santa Barbara County, California, which is one of the wealthiest counties in all of the country. I mean, in the valley I'm in, there's billionaires. Like, unfortunately, it's an interesting place. Literally, the other day I was somewhere and my wife texted me. She's like, you know, Hunter Biden was out here at some billionaire's vineyard last week hiding out. And this was a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have the Anheuser-Busch live here. The Firestones live here. You have celebrities here. And like, here I am. And God's just, you know, the church is grown in influence and maturity, and it's wild. And so, yeah. You know, for me, it's hard because I have people who have kind of a nostalgic view too. Like they think the Midwest, everyone's just Bible believing, you know, it has its own problems. You know,
yeah.
You can wear a lot of church clothes on Sunday. You wear your Sunday's best and live like hell the rest of the week and think you're a good Southern Christian. Like there's a different kind of issue in mm-hmm. the South or the Midwest okay. that we face here. And so people have that like, oh, I'm going to move back to Tennessee or I'm going to move back to, you know, wherever, same kind of deal. And yet some of them, I go, hey, you have a community here. Like you don't think you can just drop somewhere and like, just find the God-given community of believers that you found.
Right.
And so it's interesting. I remember talking to Doug Wilson years ago. I like called him up during the pandemic and just like, hey, give me some advice on, I think I talked to you before I called him up. And
yeah, I said, he's not there to chat. He's not there to chit chat. Just get straight
exactly
to business.
Exactly how you said that was going to go. and I'm so Southern. It's like, hey, let's chat and be friends. And it's like, no, what's your next question? And so anyways, I remember telling him like, hey, I got people moving out. And what should I say? And he said, you know, because he's having the exact opposite. Everyone's moving. And I've had people leave here to go to Idaho mm-hmm. and then turn around and watch us online because they haven't, you know, engaged a church. And I'm trying to convince like, hey, you can't don't just attend online here. Like you need to, if you move there, go plug into a local church.
Right.
And serve
right. That's good.
That community. And so anyways, he said, you know, when one says, hey, Sam, we're leaving because he said, you have to respect every man. And this is kind of segue into what we were talking. You have to respect every man in their, you know, I forget how he kind of phrased it, but their duty, their responsibility to provide and lead their family, right? Mm-hmm. You have to respect every man's decision to do that. And so when someone comes to you say, hey, Sam, we can't live here anymore. We're going to such and such. You need to say, may God bless you in your endeavors. Mm-hmm. And he said, when someone says, hey, Sam, we're here. We're planting in roots, come hell or high water. We're here to serve and reach this community and, you know, shine light into dark places. Then you say, hey, may God bless you in your mm-hmm. endeavors.
That's
and,
good.
And that was very impactful for me because it's made me be super open-handed with how I think about the people who are here.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you got to respect every man's ability. And some of us, it's going to be California. And some of it's, I got close friends. You know, as long as I feel like they're not doing the grass is greener on the other side, like, oh, it's greener where you water it. You can mm-hmm. thrive. You know, I like Larry Osborne's book, Thriving in Babylon. Like there's okay. a way to pray for those who are, you know, that's kind of what it's like living in California, man. Like yeah. you're under a regime.
Yeah. Right. Same here, man.
You're praying for those who, you know, that's a hard passage. You know, what a misquoted passage of Jeremiah 29:11,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you. And it comes right in the middle of a national spanking. I interpret that and go, like, that's the verse. It's like you spanking your child and you're like, remember, this is for your own good, right? Like,
it doesn't feel like it, Dad. It doesn't feel like it.
Yeah. Remember, this is the plans I have for you. Like, no, you're exiling us. You're spanking us. You're disciplining us. And in the passage before that, you know, he starts by saying, hey, write a letter to the exiles. Let them know. Pray for those who have taken you captive. What a concept. Pray for those. And and pray that they'll prosper, because if they prosper, you too will prosper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably been the thing that's been interesting about living here is even though, and separating the two, how do I keep, I'm super frustrated with Gavin Newsom, and I can't stand the hypocrisy. I literally put as a prophetic mockery, which I think is biblical. I literally put, I think you saw, I put Gavin Newsom and Matt on a church t-shirt,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I got kicked out of a coffee shop for wearing it.
I remember.
You know? And so like, I'm extremely frustrated, yet the scriptures call me to pray for him. The Christians, mm-hmm. you know, let me pray for his conversion. Let me pray for God to do something in his heart. I pray for California that it prospers. You know, when I grew up, even my uncle tried to convince me not to move out of here on his deathbed. Like I was moving that month. He died in early December. I moved right after Christmas. And on his deathbed, he was like, don't move to California.
Mm-hmm.
Because this idea was like, everyone back east is like, man, I hope an earthquake, you know, like think about even Southern, you know, Bible believing Christians are like, I hope California drops off into the ocean. It's like, bless their heart, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the similarities between our states and some of the difficulties with our states, because some of the things that have been handed down from Springfield, Illinois, which is our capital, and mainly from Chicago, and from Pritzker, that's gone across his desk into every local school within, I mean, every single small county and small school district in the state of Illinois, is the sex education that now is established and is required, and tampons in the boys' bathroom that's required, very strange and difficult things. Fortunately, our church has completely pulled our children out of, I mean, every single family in our church has pulled our children out of government schools. And so they're either homeschooled, and then we've got one family that is putting their children in private Christian school. So other than that, I mean, everybody's homeschooling with the exception of one family. And some of the challenges that we face, and probably you guys face as well, is the difficulty of raising boys as boys and girls as girls. And we know biblically, I mean, we're not in the, you know, the Illinois bubble here. We're in the scriptures. And so we know we have a charge from God to raise our children in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. And so that requirement means we raise them to be a boy who's going to be a man one day, and a girl who's going to be a woman one day. And so you have three sons and a daughter. We have three sons and a daughter. Let's just kick around some ideas. I'd love to hear how you are intentionally raising your boys, and maybe what are the differences that you're seeing and how you're going to raise your daughter as well. I'm sure there's similarities. Obviously, you do family worship. You're wanting them to walk with the Lord humbly before God and others, and all of those things. But let's just kick around some thoughts about raising children and raising them the way God would have us raise them.
Well, yeah, I would start by echoing, like, we had a mass exodus from the public school during COVID. Obviously, we were one of the most stringent lockdown states, and we have a Christian academy that now myself and three other members of my church are now on the board there. And we had a mass. Yeah, it's not a hostile takeover, but it is a takeover. So it's like, hey, we're here to make sure this goes good for a long time. Actually, before I jumped on here, I was sending, you know, we have a big auction and like a thing that helps scholarship. It's already so expensive to live here. It's to then think about sending your kids to private school on top of you're already paying taxes for the local school. So it is a conundrum. And to put your kids in private Christian school is a huge deal out here. Like you are making big life-changing decisions to do that. And so by the grace of God, we're there. I'm thankful they give me a 50% off tuition because I'm a pastor, and then there's scholarship funds. And so we're just trying to raise them. Just pray for, I think it's a new mandate on our life in just helping that school be everything it can. Not everyone can homeschool, and there we have families that are doing it. And we took the ladies through Even Exile from Canon Plus this past spring. And there were a lot of ladies who really, man, what a life-giving thing to, hey, here's how God's made me, and my desire to be at home with my kids is not something to frown on. It's not something to move away from. It is actually, it's not selfish. Like think of it, like it's not selfish to give up your income and like raise your kids. It's actually the way you were designed. And we had a gal, retired Marine, county or state park ranger living by the beach, like in, as a state park ranger, give up all of that career to homeschool her kids and stay at home.
That's awesome.
And she, at a brewery one night, like comes up, she's like, I just want to let you know, after all the teaching we've done this spring, like this was the catalyst to go, no, I can, you know. And she is the, like her husband's a firefighter. He's a strong guy. She's a strong gal. And what you might think is, oh, here's these roles. And here's this tough woman, this tough lady who would intimidate a lot of guys, who she's going, like, I'm a mom and I want to stay home. And us teaching that, being life-giving for her, and like, this is my God. And so anyways, there's some families that are homeschooling us at the Christian Academy and making sure that that's, you know, going well. It's an interesting thing to do here. And for me, just to dive in a little bit with the boys and with my girl, it's interesting. I mean, I got really good kids, and I love my kids. My wife is absolutely fantastic. And when we took on the role here at the church, you know, our commitment was she was going to be able to stay home with the kids. And that was the goal. She, now the kids are kind of, we're in these Christian schools and we're kind of involved in that way. She's going to help me part-time at the church. And so we're kind of working in that, you know, it's out of the home, it's with me together. And
yeah, that's great.
So it's complementative. And, so we're excited about that, but, you know, I'm proud of my kids. She's been a major factor in that. For me, raising boys, it's an interesting thing because I was raised by a single mom, and dad wasn't around. They were in church, left my mom when I was five, had an affair with a lady at his work, had twins by that lady, and then one of them died at birth.
Oh, man.
And so that's been an interesting dynamic. And I was a daddy's boy from 5 years old on, and my dad was kind of in and out. I'd spend weekends with him, and then I would spend every summer in Georgia, leave Kentucky. He left the coal mines to go to the carpet mills. And so I would spend every summer. I started talking to my wife. We had a little staycation away just two nights ago. My mom's in town, and I started thinking, man, I raised myself. Like I spent most of the time, I was a daddy's boy, but dad was in and out. And then I would spend summers. I love my dad so much. I would go down, he had a swing shift in the carpet mills, and I would sit in a house or a trailer in a trailer park in Georgia where I wasn't from every summer from 5 to 15. And it would be 3 days at a time by myself.
Oh, wow.
And just to spend his 2 days off or his 3 days off. And then he'd go back to work for four. And I started thinking, man, I really have even things in high school that I look back and I got to kind of rethink about those moments in my life. You know, Jordan Peterson talks about like self-authoring, like looking back at your story. I have to look back and almost repent because I have some judgment towards my younger self. That's like, man, I can, you know, almost have to have some grace for myself in the past. Situations I dealt with in ministry young at Westmore with Robert, with Sam Kidwell, decisions I made at 20, 21 years old is because I didn't have a dad helping me with the emotional issues there.
Right.
So I kind of raise myself and I look back, that impacts how I look at my sons and like figuring out. And then I'm putting myself around men who do it well, but I'm also going, and I'm looking back at my childhood, and some of it, like one particular example is my son, Judah. He's 9 years old. He is a golden child, man. He's the firstborn. He's got Justin Bieber like hair and blue eyes, and he can sing and play the guitar at 9 years old. He can quote every Bible verse. He is an athlete. If he's 6'5", he's coming for Tom Brady's GOAT status, dude. Like he's that kid. My other kid, we talk about that, but he's that kid. His biggest conundrum is he's a deep thinker, and I've always been a deep thinker. And his emotions get the best of him. And I see it in me. He's in a house where he's a pastor's kid. We talk about emotions. I'm literally talking to you about raisins. Like we're in the mix of the emotional side. Like we're not typical. Like even if you're going to talk about roles, like pastoring has more of that fit. You know, I'm with my cop buddies and my firefighters, and they're like, what'd you do today? Like, I put out a fire and I, you know, saved somebody's life. What'd you do? I don't know. I talked about my feelings with Jared Sparks, you know.
Right.
Like, it's an interesting kind of conundrum. And I, you know, Judah can get just down in the dumps, like depression at 9 years old. Like he doesn't have like his mind is big, existential crisis, and he's got a great life. And I see that thing that was in me that led me to almost committing suicide at 16. I see that at nine. I go, if that's not checked at 9 years old, what is that? You know, how does the enemy use that big, deep emotions, big feel that God's using? And so, dude, I'm hard, like I nip it in the bud and hey, I'm not going to let you ruin the family stuff for one thing. No, I'm going to speak the truth to you. Hey, you're lying to yourself. And so when you're around people, be like, man, Sam's hard on Judah. Like I'm on top of it. Like, hey, dude, like we're not going to do that. Like, I picture myself. Oh, I remember what that was like when I was at my friend's house and I broke down emotionally and I was the kid of a single mom. Like I see some of my past where like, oh, that's where a father would have stepped in and gave that direction.
So the things that you didn't receive as a son, then you're trying to learn those things. What did I not receive? And then identify them. So is that representative then of a lot of the things you're doing with him and your other boys as well? Just trying to kind of rewind the clock and figure it out and then give to them what you didn't get.
Yeah. You know, I saw a clip by Paul Washer years ago and I actually used it in our, it was on the Dial In podcast with Johnny. I forget how to pronounce his last name. He was at Masters with John MacArthur, but Paul Washer did an interview about raising sons. And he said, my kids were in a pastor's home. Like it's a soft environment and I got to find artificial ways to harden. So he talked about you're going to disrespect you and talk to your mom like that. You know, you're going to take these bricks from Home Depot and you're one end of the yard and you're going to go stack. Cause he didn't live on a ranch or anything like that. So I was inspired by that. And so Judah's nine. And I realized when he has purpose in his life, and men need that sense of purpose, protector, provider, those things that are God given in us. I want to develop, like I'm not raising a little boy. I'm raising a man, as you said earlier. And one thing that we started to do is we have a lot of friends who have horse ranches and cattle ranches and cowboy. Well, I don't live on that. You know, I did, I called him up and said, hey, my kid's looking to get dirty. He needs some purpose in his life. And so can we send him out? And so we have a friend, they rehabilitate high-end horses. And dude, he's out shoveling and mucking stalls at 9 years old.
Yeah.
He comes home with love and he's setting his alarm. And this is this kid. And all of a sudden his emotional level, things that at home that would normally set him off, he's waking, he's setting his alarm at 6 a.m. I want to make sure I'm there at 7 for the feeding trough. And then all these guys that are Hispanic guys, they don't speak much English. He's riding out how to talk to them in Spanish and like learning their names and how to say phrases, comes home dirt. And now the ranch owners are like, hey, open invite anytime you want to drop
that's
them
great.
Off at nine. And so like, it was that like, hey, I didn't have that. What's this purpose? What's this, you know, this protector provider, 9 years old. How am I? So with my boys, those are the types of thing we're doing. And, you know, quite frankly, I joke here, people think we got good boys. And one of the things that, you know, kind of spawned a men's ministry here that we started doing Ironwork. And I, for a season, I asked the church, we literally did nothing else but men's ministry. And we're having 80 to 90 men show up every Tuesday night. You know, 90 families represented there, you know, close to 90 families. And because I started looking around and people are looking at my boys and they're going, man, those are good boys. I think I'd like my daughter to marry a Kaiser boy. You know how it happens when they're young and they're starting, oh, what's that look like? And I started looking around going, wait, I got a daughter now. Who's raising my daughter's husband?
Mm-hmm. Right.
In California. Like, you know, okay, what's her peer? And I started going, dude, I got to go after these men who I love and a lot of new Christians, a lot of new believers. Hey, no. Here's how we... And, you know, I've disciplined, you know, I'm a firm believer. I always quote, I think we misquoted. I say, you spare the rod, you hate your son is what the passage says. Not spare the rod, spoil the child. You hate your son.
Hmm.
And so I've spanked early and often, and especially if they're violent with one another. Like I talked about using this illustration in a sermon the other day. Like, what do you do when one of your kids hurt your kid? Mm-hmm. Like this, you know, that's the gospel, right? Mm-hmm. Like God is angry towards sin and those who hurt his children, and mm-hmm. yet us. And mm-hmm. so, you know, this conundrum, I sense that. What happens when my, you know, my one boy, you know, puts his hands around the throat of my younger son? Like, what do you, what,
right?
You know, like you're jumping into action. So we've disciplined, you know, that looks quite different with my daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, I think boys need physical discipline. My, you know, one little pat on the butt will break my daughter's heart. And she'll, mm-hmm. you know, even though, you know, before she's able to rationalize it and reason, she needs a spanking every now and then. But, and in California, that's an interesting thing, dynamic socially, right? Okay. Like, cause someone will be like, man, Sam, you got really good kids. And I'll go, you don't want to know how they got that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's my instant next line. Oh, you think I got good boys? You don't want to know how they got that way. You know, they got that way. You don't like, and that's, you know, that's been an interesting dynamic, and there is a hardness and in a way of sharpening, right? Iron sharpens iron as one man sharpens another. We want, mm-hmm. we want to gender neutralize that. Mm-hmm. There's a hardness that comes with men and they rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
And good. There's a gentleness and there's a softness and there's a, as the scriptures say, this woman is the weaker vessel. Now that's not in value. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And if you order a package to your house, it's very expensive. You know what usually is on the box? Fragile. Mm-hmm. Handle with care.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved Meghan Markle's in Even Exile. She talks about the difficult passage in, I think it's 1 Corinthians.
Hold on, you called her Meghan Markle. So isn't that Meghan. Let's see, Rebecca Markle, but you called her Meghan. Wasn't Meghan. That the isn't that the queen or something like that? Or isn't that Prince Henry or
So yeah,
I'm not Rebecca up on my pop culture. Yeah, Rebecca, there we go.
There you go.
Yeah, correction.
Rebecca Markle. She says, where's young Jamie with the fat check? And Rebecca Markle talks about the glory of the glory. Woman is
yeah,
the,
if good.
Man is the crown, woman is the jewel at the top of the crown. And mm-hmm. that was so life. That was one of the most powerful expositions in that documentary. I would encourage anyone who's dealing with these roles of complementarianism, you know, we kind of can dive into that. I know you're always baiting me to try to show my conversion from egalitarian to complementarian. It's always, I've been a little more soft complementarian. But that exposition was life-giving for our ladies and powerful for me. I thought, mm-hmm. man, that's something. So for me, like how I handle with care my daughter, my yeah. wife,
right,
women in my life, and how I sharpen my boys,
mm-hmm.
vastly different.
Yeah.
And I think those passages that we've wanted, like our society, to move away the gender specificness of these passages
mm-hmm.
are hurting us. And people were like, you know, they would see my boys, and there were some ladies at the time, you know, coming out of feminism. And I knew they, like, COVID kind of changed their paradigm. There were people who went further to the left and some people who were teetering in the middle who went mm-hmm. like, okay, no, I'm not playing with fire. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so people were like, I can't wait to see you with a daughter, because they thought I was so hard on them.
Mm-hmm.
And like it, and they would say things like, it's going to change you. And I go, not with my boys, it won't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
It will change me, because mm-hmm. now I have a daughter, and there's a side of me that my daughter will see.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a side of me that my daughter will have, and she needs
mm-hmm.
that my boy, that it's a different kind of feel, right? So my daughter gets a different experience because she's my daughter.
Yeah.
And my boys get a different experience.
Well, I love what you're talking about, because even our goals when it comes to raising sons and daughters, so often people will think, well, you're going to get a daughter, and then all of a sudden you're going to become a feminist who wants your daughter to take over the world or something like that. And it's like, whoa, whoa, no. I want my daughter to be raised as a lady and want her to be a godly woman, in the same way that I want my sons to be raised as a boy into a man, wanting him to be a godly man. I don't want them to be the exact same. They're not the same. They're different. And I don't want to tear apart the uniquenesses that God has established in them as the boy or girl that they are. I want to raise them into what God's called them to be. And
my daughter's a big personality and a firecracker, man. Yeah. And she's tough.
Mine is too.
Man, she loves feminine things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She loves the idea of, like, she's carrying her babies around. She's grabbing, like, she asked for a sink yesterday. Like, she was like, I want to wash dishes, you know? And it's like, that's okay. And I think we so frown on that, but she's literally over there like, no, I'm taking care of this. Like, she sees the glory of her mother caring for the place that she's in.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
she sees radiance of a female caring and providing for, and that is to be cherished and celebrated.
Absolutely.
And she goes, you know what? I want to be like that.
Well, in the same way. Yeah, absolutely. My daughter's the exact same way, man. And in the same way, so like God has designed boys to be protectors, providers. So they're going to be naturally drawn to the tools to get the job done. So why is it that a boy will cut cheese with their teeth and make a gun out of it, or take a piece of bread and make a knife out of a piece of bread, or get out and whittle with their dull knife a stick into a sword or a spear? It's because they're drawn to things that they're wired for, that God has established. Now, it doesn't mean that every single boy, obviously, there's going to be some boys that like knives and guns more than others, but in general, and the same thing with ladies, is that little girls within them, they're going to be drawn to the tools to get, like, my little girl walks around acting like she's nursing her baby. She's like, nurse, she's acting like she's holding this baby up, acting like she's nursing it, because that's established very early on. And I think for decade on end now, even within Christianity and Christian circles and evangelicalism as a whole, those kind of things have been minimized, where we've seen that we don't want to reinforce too harshly these, you know, masculine stereotypes or feminine stereotypes. Obviously, we don't want our boys to be ungodly men, but when I see them whittling something into a knife or a spear, I want to encourage that. And when I see my daughter doing that and saying, hey, I want a little sink. I want a sink, mom, or I want a kitchen set. Okay. Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get you a kitchen set. And then I'm going to act like you're making me breakfast in the morning, and I'm going to celebrate that. That's a good thing.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's something I watched a TV show years ago where it was like, you know, the modern sitcom or whatever. And the wife was a successful lawyer and the dad was a stay-at-home dad, and they're at the breakfast table and she's in her, you know, business suit, and like there's this moment where he's like, oh, you get to go off to the office, and she looks at him and almost like, I'm gonna tear your head off. She's like, don't you think it doesn't rip my heart out every day I go to that office and leave my children and my family? This is like an ABC, I forget the show. Mm-hmm. What she's saying is, this is a, you know, sin is the Hebrew word for sin is katah, which means like an archer to miss the mark, like to be off course. And so I describe sin as deviation from design. What do you think? I was surfing early this morning. I was in the water with a guy and we're talking about, and I've used this in the water with a guy. It's like sin is deviation from design, deviation to miss what you were designed to be. And, you know, what we want to do is we want to think that these are stereotypes. And yet, even in this, is saying, no, I'm doing the opposite of what I was designed to do. And I was telling him, I was like, when you ride a surfboard, like we have in this, our culture, right? Christianity is about not doing rather than doing. Okay. And so it's like, the caricature is like a moralism, right? Like, don't do this, stay away from it. If you serve God, you like, he's going to take away your desires and gifts, but it's that exact opposite, right?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And so
yeah.
I always say Christianity is not staying out of the dark. Christianity is running towards the light. You got a darkness great. Problem, addiction problem, you deal, like run towards. So it's not trying to cheat on your wife. It's actually pursuing your wife, loving her, caring for her, serving her, all of a sudden being sexually intimate with her, being satisfied by her. And I'm not looking for anybody else. Mm-hmm. But if you're not pursuing your wife, you're going to be discontented. You're going to be frustrated. You're going to be doing it. And then now it's like the one lady at work, this person, like, oh man, I'm trying not to do the bad thing rather than what has God designed you to do. And so I'm having this conversation. This guy's just going through this divorce and his kids, and he finds out I'm a pastor, and we're like in the middle of catching these set waves and chatting. And he's like, you know, I go, hey, people say, you know, the cultural adage is we weren't designed for monogamy. That's the new thing, right? Like, we weren't designed to be monogamous. And when we believe the doctrines of demons, like Darwinian evolution, we buy into a more beastly like form of procreation, right? But No. Like, ask anyone who's slept around, ask anyone who has been from people who've left the porn industry, all these things, like these people are like empty and going, man, right. This feels horrible, right? Mm-hmm. Why? Because you were designed for a mate. You were designed for one person. Yeah, you were designed to pursue. This is where fulfillment. And then I hear later about what he's going through. It's like just the Lord putting that in my heart to share it this way. I go, here's the thing about Christianity wants to get labeled. It's like, you know, get it right. It, like, God is an angry mob boss in the sky who's like, get it right or pay the price, right? It's curtains for you. And yet, no, what he's doing is trying to get us to work the way in which we designed for human flourishing. When you're pursuing what God's designed you to do, this is where life actually is, right? Jesus says, you want to gain your life, lose it. Like, find what truly life is in this regard. And I said, it's like a surfboard that's designed the way it works. Mm-hmm. You get on something that doesn't work, like, man, this doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Design is actually getting you on this adventure, man. It's taking the wave that when you're moving towards a heterosexual, monogamous, faithful, loving relationship as the gospel lays out for us. And this is points to the serve, you know, the submissive and servant leadership, the elegant submission and graceful leadership. I think that's how I put it in a wedding script that I just got canceled from the other day for these ideas. It was a very prominent wedding in the Valley, a dad who asked me, and that's a whole nother thing, but it was a very high profile wedding. And I've been talking to him for months. She's kind of pseudo Christian, spiritual. He's Christian. We've had multiple talks. Dad started attending the church, and literally I sent him, they asked for the script again. They were like, brought me a script. And I was like, hey, you know, just so you know, like, I'm a Christian pastor and I talk about Jesus. And so that's always going to be what I talk about, especially when it comes to marriage, because this is what, you know. They asked for the script, read the script, got a call the day before the rehearsal.
Okay.
Like, hey, we're gonna go a different direction. Hey, we love you.
Peace.
And it still doesn't, like, okay, man. Like,
praise the Lord. You know.
You can't remove. So talking to that guy today, like, these types of relationships, men being men, women being women, and then God using that for our flourishing, this relationship, anything outside of that is a deviation from design and therefore sinful. Anyone who knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. Like, man, all right, this mom who's going, man, I'm leaving my kids every day, I'm not raising, like, man, what would it take for me to be in my kids' lives, nurturing, caring for, keeping all deal, any deviation from that, and you know it, like, in your heart, right? And then men, to protect, provide. And I think as children, when we see them leaning into how they were designed to work, let's push that, right? Let's literally pastor them, like,
that's good,
that's shepherd. Okay, let's keep going that direction.
So let's wrap things up here with a encouragement to the folks listening. And obviously the scriptures are going to be for us our, you know, guide. It's God's word to us. It equips us for every good work that we're called to. So when it comes to fatherhood, we have God's word. So obviously the scriptures are going to, you know, learning fatherhood from the fatherhood of God is always going to be our go-to when it comes to fathering our sons and fathering our daughters. But other than that, what have been some helpful resources for you as a guy that's had to unlearn and relearn a lot of things about fatherhood and raising children? And in a lot of ways, I'm, you know, in a different, I had a different background than you did, but have a father that I love dearly, but just couldn't give me the things that, you know, he would have liked to give me. And so there were a lot of things that I did have to pick up myself, but he was present. He was there, but I still had to learn, unlearn and relearn a lot of things. So what have been some books that have been helpful for you, or some audio podcast, anything like that that's been helpful for you to think through fatherhood and what your role is as you're intentionally raising boys and girls?
Yeah. I mean, for me, less books and more mentors. Like I've had some
mentors.
Good people.
Okay.
A lot of good, you know, I've looked at people, man, they, you know, friends of mine who were, you know, dude, this guy's a good guy. You know what I mean? And you're looking like, man, he's got a good dad. Hmm. And then it was like, well, I want to hang out. Like, it wasn't just let me hang out with my buddy. I got a buddy named Pierce Gillum. He's a doctor in Knoxville now. And his dad was a general overseer of the denomination I was a part of years ago.
Okay.
And it was, man, I just want to be around that guy. It was kind of like the same way for pastoring. Like, it was God put coaches in my life, put, you know, and then just the scriptures and looking at it. Like, I remember years ago we would talk, you know, wrestling through some difficult passages on women in ministry and, all right, what are these roles in the church? What are these roles in the home? And I have a sense, you know, I hate the role, you know, the labels of egalitarian, complementarian, although they are helpful. I think for me, the hard part is like when I'm ministering to single moms, what does this look like? What are these, you know, I think about women in the workforce, like, okay, is there a season of nurturing? Is there a season of career? Is there a season? Like, what are these things that, like, okay, the kids are young, now they're off. Like, okay, am I teaching? I'm thankful for female teachers. I'm thankful for doctors. I'm thankful for nurses. So these are things that I was wrestling through and still kind of, I think the most for me has been recently, Rebecca Markle's Even Exile has been huge.
It's great. It's great.
That documentary, Canon Plus, Recovering Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, Piper and Grudem. I think the biggest wake up for me years ago was Grudem's Evangelical Feminism, A New Path to Liberalism.
Okay.
And seeing how the interpretations of these roles in the churches in church really pushed these mainstream denominations to now wokeism, right? Like to ordaining homosexuals. And I live in a town in a valley where there's a married man pastor. Like, he's an Episcopal priest and he is married to a man. And these are the, and then there's another guy who looks like me, kids, and he pastors the Lutheran church. And I mean, he took his congregation through white fragility as a book study. He is as woke as they come. And, you know, global politics in a small town, especially here in this kind of bubble, and it hits the, you know, I'm going to run into these people at the grocery store. We're in like all of a sudden these national kind of things are hitting right here. And so Vodi Bachman's Fault Lines has been helpful for me
thinking
about
one.
How to think through some of those. And yeah, so just leaning into the scriptures, Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life, I think have been, you know, some of those. One of the main rules he says, don't allow your children to do anything that makes you dislike them.
That was memorable.
And and I love that, because like there are times where like, hey, if your kid's annoying you and you love them more than anything, you will die for them and they're getting on your nerves, what do you think that's doing for everybody else? You know?
Right.
And so like I'm pretty hard, like, no. Like, you're gonna be pleasant to your peers, you're gonna be respectful, you're gonna, you know, because that's gonna create an experience where people love them, want to be around them, invite them over. And, you know, I'm proud of that. So those are some,
yeah, that's good.
Resources.
Well, listen, folks, if you don't have a good father in your life, if you didn't get what you're wanting to give to your children, then man, what a good word of encouragement. Go find a mentor, find somebody that you respect, look at a man that's a good father and spend some time with him. Ask him to go out to lunch with you, talk to him here and there, get encouraged by him. Just learn all you can, get mentors, read books, but then just be intentional. You know, it's interesting about fatherhood that, you know, God builds good fathers and can make a good father out of a man that didn't have a good father and didn't have a father at all. And I think
In the church, the purpose of the church and James's true religion is taking care of the widows and orphans, and that's single moms. And mm-hmm. we have a new society. He wrote that there was not a cultural basis where men just abandoned their children, and we mm-hmm. have that now.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a deacon, if you're a man in the church, if you're like the next time, because what can happen is you just couple up. We have people over, friends over, like we're vacation, like we go get snowed in with our friends, and man, I got four kids. This guy's got three. They got three. We're like 15 kids. We get snowed in 6 feet of snow, and what a cool experience for our kids. You know, like, oh man, we're trying to like, okay, how are we getting out of here? Or mm-hmm. what's food rationing? And like, what an experience. But I look around and go, man, I would not be on that trip. Mm-hmm. as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes what we do is we couple up, and I would just encourage families, man, go after and minister a single mom. The next time you're inviting for dinner, invite a single mom over with a kid, invite that young man to go fishing with you, hunting. Think about when you're taking your boys, add a tag on, add a third spot, add a fourth spot. Cause that was me. There were deacons in the church. There are pastors, coaches who were like, hey, I'm going to call Sam up and he's going to tag. And that literally was my childhood.
Oh, that's
just
awesome.
Tagging. And so watching my friends' dads is how I became a good dad.
That's good. Well, guys, it's been a lot of fun. I want to thank Sam for coming on the show again. I appreciate it, man. And why don't you go ahead and tell people where they can find more if they want to listen to your sermons or anything like that. Tell them where they can find the website and maybe the Instagram as well. If you're always good follow on Instagram with the church page.
Yeah, so, man, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. I love seeing the success of this thing. It's cool. Yeah, I got to get better. I think I've put out 7 podcasts. I'm too analytical about them. But anyways, our website is crossroadscentralcoast.com. You can watch, you know, full services there and see some sermons on there. We're in the book of Ephesians right now. We've probably been in there for 4 months right now, trucking through Ephesians. And then our Instagram is SYV Crossroads Church. And so San Ynez Valley, SYV Crossroads Church. And there's usually some sermon clips and things out there.
Awesome. All right, man. We've been talking to Sam Kaiser. Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jerry.
Thanks again for listening to the Shepherd's Crook podcast. For more information, you can go to theshepherdscrook.co. Please consider leaving a rating or review on iTunes. And if you want to become a member of the Shepherd's Crook, please message me and we'll get you on the list. We hope you have a great rest of your day.